From the heartland of America, the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be, across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. On the ride tonight, later on, reincarnation with Dr. Bruce Goldberg. But here's what's happening. Well, a coronal mass ejection expected to hit Earth's magnetic field on yesterday seems to have missed the planet. No signatures of an impact are evident in solar wind data. NOAA has downgraded the odds of a geomagnetic storm now to no more than 10%. That's good news. Many medical implants are vulnerable to attacks that could threaten their users' lives, according to studies. What kind of sickos would do this? Security researchers have developed attacks that locate and compromise implants used to manage conditions such as diabetes and heart disease. One attack identified a radio signal that, if rebroadcast, would have switched off the guy's heart machine. Researchers say more work needs to be done to secure implants and protect against malicious actions. Again, why would anybody want to fool around with that? Rising licensing fees are driving the cost for basic and premium pay TV higher by 6%, according to a new study. And if you're one of those people who complain that there's nothing to watch on TV, even though you get lots of channels, you're not going to be happy with the news. Turns out you're also paying more for cable. The Consumer Financial Protection Bureau has announced that it's considering new rules aimed at mortgage services to help protect you against costly surprises. The Bureau's new rules will require servicers to issue mortgage statements that are clearer, as well as better disclosures about any fees or changes in a loan's interest rate. A study published this week in the journal Cancer shows that people who have had dental x-rays are more likely to develop a type of brain tumor than those who have not. Now, they say this does not prove that x-rays cause tumors, but supports previous research about the connection. Dental x-rays also have been implicated in thyroid cancer. Listen to this story. If you eat a lot of chicken, a new study found evidence suggesting that a class of antibiotics previously banned by the U.S. government for poultry production is still in use. And there are other strange things besides antibiotics in our chicken as well. Poultry on factory farms are routinely fed caffeine, active ingredients in the over-the-counter medicines, Tylenol and Benadryl, and even arsenic. In the April 5th edition of the New York Times, a researcher quotes saying that, well, we're kind of floored. It's unbelievable what we have found. The most important drugs found in the study are a broad spectrum of antibiotics used to treat serious bacterial infections in people. They feed them to chickens. A Taiwanese man and his two buddies bludgeoned to death a Facebook user after it was discovered that the user flirted with the other guy's wife on the social networking site. The 34-year-old lives in Taiwan, set up a meeting with the man, and when the two met at a agreed to spot, he was attacked by a group of people carrying baseball bats. Lauren Weinstein monitoring the internet for us. Lauren, this is serious stuff, but I take it it's going to get worse, isn't it?
Well, yeah, though you have to take some basic precautions, right? I mean, first off, I wouldn't necessarily recommend flirting on the internet when you have, you know, a spouse already. That creates kind of a friction situation to start with there. But if you're going to have a meeting to discuss this with someone, perhaps having it at a lonely snack bar at 2 a.m. isn't really recommended either. In other words, The initial communications took place on Facebook, but that doesn't mean you can just throw common sense out the window in every other respect. If you go out and meet somebody who's angry about you, who you've never met before, at 2 a.m, you know, bad things can happen, right? But as far as Facebook itself is concerned, and other social media also, if you are going to, and again, I'm not recommending doing this, but if you're going to be carrying on communications that your spouse isn't going to necessarily approve of, perhaps it would be worthwhile to consider a separate account, perhaps a separate computer, perhaps a separate location, you know, when doing that, because people are going to react emotionally, as you would expect, and it's possible sometimes that perhaps innocent flirtation, which possibly is what was going on in this case, by the way, because it turns out that the man and the woman involved had never actually met.
Ugh.
So sometimes what will happen is people are carrying on kind of almost like a role-playing game, you know, over the social network, over the system. But a spouse doesn't see it that way, and then things can escalate out of control when care isn't used. And, of course, use the privacy settings that are available if you're going to be doing things that might be misconstrued or misunderstood.
Good point. Lauren, thank you so much. And again, a Facebook user bludgeoned to death with a baseball bat when the husband of a girl who was apparently flirting with the other guy on Facebook decided to take matters into his own hands. Thousands of worshipers who have been flocking into a Macedonian church where saints, pictures of saints, are said to have brightened in color without being restored. Father Zoran of the St. Dimitra Church said the murals were long obscured by the residue of candle smoke, but they began to appear clearer over the weekend, and everyone thinks it's a miracle. Up next, UFO Forensic Files. Wilbur Allen joins us for a couple hours as he follows up on incredible sightings around Washington, D.C. And if you haven't been to our website yet, take a look at some of the work there under our highlights reel. Some great pictures there. Back with Wilbur Allen on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. I'm George Norrie, engineer Wilbur Allen, no stranger to UFO encounters. An alien encounter in the U.K. at the age of five left him face-to-face with a group of gray ETs. Wilbur's work is a result of alien contact. And let me bring him in on Coast to Coast AM. Back again. Wilbur, how are you?
Pretty good. Thanks for having me back, George.
And a lot of people will, of course, remember you from your appearance back in July, but you were a former White House Air Force One engineer for one of the networks, weren't you?
Yes, ABC News.
Okay, what were some of your responsibilities there, Wilbur?
Well, I covered Ronald Reagan, George Bush, and Bill Clinton.
I always like to preface that because some people always like to say, well, who is this person who has witnessed these things or has seen things? And as far as I'm concerned, Wilbur, I don't care. I think if the person is honest and dedicated, it doesn't matter whether he's a security guard, you know, works at a fast food place, is a police officer, doesn't matter. But sometimes it helps to have credibility, doesn't it?
It does indeed.
All right, let's get into some of the work that you've been doing since we've last talked. Any updates for us?
Yes, I, in fact, was able to intercept some footage from Apollo 11 and did a analysis on that footage, which was filmed during the mission in 1969, and it was shot outside the command module, and the film footage was a 16-millimeter motion picture camera that was used on board the command module at the time by the astronauts, and the film itself showed, without a doubt, a formation of luminous green anomalies, and they were in space along with another smaller green anomaly, and the footage clearly showed that this anomaly that was filmed in 1969 had the same characteristics, had the same overall qualities as the objects I encountered at the U.S. Capitol building July 16th in 2002.
Now, is this an object that Buzz Aldrin should have seen? Is this the one that he has hinted that he might have seen?
This is the object he has hinted he saw in the outside the command module during Apollo 11. It was also presented on a Science Channel special, which interviewed the crew of Apollo 11 and the anomalies they encountered in space during that moon mission.
I had a call during one of my open line segments, Wilbur, on Friday, and an individual said that we had recordings, and I believed it was Neil Armstrong. You might be able to help us here, of a recording of one of the astronauts on the moon, and I think it was Armstrong, who said they're on the rim and it looks like they're looking at us. Was that Armstrong?
I'm not really sure, but that's consistent with the evidence that's being presented, and it's interesting that there's a level of deniability that's still present by some of those involved in the Apollo program, and that I'm basing everything right now on physical samples, and for me, it could only be conclusive that the samples that were presented in 1969 and the samples I was able to gather in 2002 were 100% definitive and consistent with each other.
Okay. You can pick up the phone there if you want.
No, I can't do that.
Absolutely. Live radio. The object that was apparently near Apollo 11, how long did it follow
the command module?
Not sure in terms of how it was presented in that presentation itself, but the footage that I was able to extract was approximately 45 seconds worth of footage. And in the 45 seconds, the object demonstrated abilities that were inconsistent with anything known to man. And in fact, it had the same plasma qualities as the objects that I encountered at the U.S. Capitol building.
And apparently, Wilbur, Apollo 11 was not the only Space Command ship that was being followed during our missions, was it?
It was not the only one. And in fact, I believe footage from Apollo 16 substantiates that also. And the footage from Apollo 16 taken on the surface of the moon, one of the pieces in particular was a series of images taken of a dome-like anomaly in two specific positions. In one position, the anomaly is propped up on its side at about a 45-degree angle. In the second shot, the anomaly is sitting flat on the base surface of the moon itself. And what's interesting about that particular sample from Apollo 16 is it's consistent with the teardrop anomaly that was imaged over the Baltimore Harbor on August the 3rd in 2008 when I was there and encountered the orange spheres that landed in front of me. So we have been able to establish consistency with objects photographed on Earth with objects that were presented by the Apollo astronauts during the Apollo moon program.
Well, we're talking with Wilbur Allen, of course. He's a former White House Air Force One engineer for ABC News. He did not work for the White House. He worked for the television network. Tell us about this 2002 UFO sighting in Washington, D.C. again, Wilbur.
Well, it's interesting. It all started with a friend of mine who was my supervisor at ABC, and he went partially insane after seeing what he claimed were extraterrestrials around then-Senator John Glenn. And shortly after his emotional breakdown, I'd say about a year later, while doing another assignment for another company, actually, I and two other associates were at the U.S. Capitol building at about midnight, and for about an hour and a half, we witnessed objects, some of which landed on the roof of the Capitol, some of which landed in the rear of the reflection pool, some of which landed in Taft Park, were imaged on 35-millimeter film during the time of this event. And that's what I'm basing most of this discussion on. It's based on this footage and footage that I was able to gather throughout the years, and it's been 10 years since that encounter. And the 10 years, the information that's come in definitely assures me the fact that these objects were extraterrestrial in nature and that on July the 16th, 2002, at the U.S. Capitol building, I encountered aliens.
And we're going to get into that, Wilbur. Now, the 1952 flap over D.C., was that similar to what you saw?
It was indeed similar. In fact, my July 16, 2002 encounter was filmed at the same location as the July 16, 1952 encounter, and that the footage that was obtained from the 1952 sessions clearly showed objects that I'm still imaging in the skies of Washington, D.C. at this present day.
Now, were these objects clearly visible to anybody with the naked eye?
In 1952, they were, and in fact, I found a witness to that event, and at the time, the witness was 5 years old, and he was playing in his backyard when the fleet of objects flew over his head and flew towards the U.S. Capitol building, and when I showed him the footage based on what I was able to gather, he affirmed the fact that the footage was consistent with what he saw as a child, so we're able to establish that these objects and these events did indeed take place by people who witnessed them. And there are few people who come forward with this information, and it's rare that you get an individual that feels comfortable in talking about an event that most people would consider that person crazy or even talking about.
Well, that's a good point. Now, what about the 2002 sightings? Any other people witness this?
In fact, it's interesting in my research of that, including the two individuals that were with me that night, the 20th of July, which was 4 days later, a couple witnessed what they said to be a green fireball flying over the Capitol Dome. And that green fireball, based on the witness testimony, was consistent with the objects that I photographed 4 days earlier, which was also consistent with the police reports that were made by the ground personnel that were on duty at that time.
Wilbur, what does your gut tell you about all this? I want to know how you're feeling about the things that you've seen and what you think other people are seeing. What do you think is going on?
I think the extraterrestrials have infiltrated our society. I think they're based here. I think that because we are limited in terms of what we can see and what we can hear, in most cases, most people would not be able to see them because they're higher order intelligence, and that because of our limitations, we just clearly do not see that these objects are in front of us constantly on a daily basis. And like I was indicating with the samples that I'm getting at 1/8,000th of a second, I'm getting objects that are blurs, and that is clearly something that's outside the range of a human's capability in terms of their visual ability to see objects that are outside the range of the human eye.
Do you think government knows something's happening?
Absolutely. They absolutely do know what's going on, and it's interesting that to me that the footage from Apollo 11 with the consistency of the anomaly indicated to me in 1969 that NASA did indeed have information on these anomalies, and that based on the samples that I took in 2002 and based on the samples in 1969, that nothing was acted upon in terms of my report. So it's interesting to me that they would turn the other cheek and allow an object, an anomaly, to land on the roof of the Capitol building and not raise any concern with the public.
Is it conceivable that there may be a mothership circling our planet where these objects just pop in and pop out?
I believe it is, and I believe that these objects, based on what I was able to image, have the ability to cloak, and when they're cloaked, we can't see them. But the digital cameras that are out right now, especially the newer Nikons, the D7000, the D4 that's out, can see them without a doubt.
Ingo Swann, the great remote viewer, in his book, Penetration, said that he saw objects on the far side of the moon, structures. You believe there are objects on the moon as well. Tell me why.
I absolutely believe they are on the moon, and based on the newer footage that's out there, especially from the Japanese moon probe, it's clearly consistent with reports from past surveys of the moon of structures that are inconsistent with the overall characteristics and geographics of the moon itself. So when you look at the geographics of a structure, especially as something as massive as the moon, and you see something outside of the ordinary there, and some of the footage based on this newer survey of the moon shows what appears to be a large craft, either crashed or based on the dark side of the moon. So it's all possibly conceivable to me that these events are indeed taking place, and because they're outside of the view of the human eye, we just don't fathom their existence or the possibility that they're there.
Are these objects on the far side because they know we can't see them?
That's a perfect place to put them.
Yeah, it sure is. It sure is. What do you think NASA knows, and what are they withholding?
I think they're withholding a lot of information. And I think what they're doing is protecting us from the possibilities of chaos. And that chaos was presented when Jules Verne did The War of the Worlds. And when it was broadcast and the effect that that broadcast had on the people that listened to it and the way they responded to what was fictitious data at the time. So now put actual data on the air and see what happens. I think there would be utter chaos and possibility of destabilization of society.
Well, you're right. In some respect, Wilbur, I think there will be chaos. And also, though, I think even more importantly for government, they believe that they will lose control of people. I think once people honestly realize deep down inside, without any shadow of it, any doubt, that there are other beings like us throughout this universe, I think people are going to start saying, hey, now, what the heck am I paying taxes for? What am I doing this? What am I doing that? Quit controlling me. This is a universal thing. And I think that would probably happen, don't you?
I believe so. We are all bound to the companies that provide power and water and gas and all the services. So we're basically still enslaved to the power companies. And that's the way things are, and that's the way things will be. But say something along the way of an extraterrestrial comes along and has a new power source, that would completely destabilize the power companies and the gas companies of Earth. So we're worried about that because it's more about the money than about the people and what could possibly happen with improved technology introduced into our society.
All right, stay with us. Wilbur Allen with us. We're going to take phone calls next hour with him about these UFO cases. We've got more to talk with him about when we roll right back on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, our guest for a couple hours, Wilbur Allen, as we talk about UFOs and some of his incredible encounters as well. His book, UFO Forensic Files, his website linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Let's talk a little bit more, Wilbur, about the humans and whether they're ready for alien contact at all. I would guess this audience could handle it. I'm not sure the rest of the public. What do you think?
Well, you know, consider your audience is not the entire world, and that it's a percentage of individuals that listen to the show that would be open-minded to it. The bulk majority, I would say 80% of the world population, definitely not.
No, they would panic. They would create all kinds of mess.
Absolutely. It's definitely something not for the squeamish. And when you consider the way we've been indoctrinated, and most people want to believe that there's only human, and human is all there is, and that the possibility of an advanced life form, an extraterrestrial, just doesn't possibly come into the connection at all with the way we're indoctrinated.
Now, if that's the case, that there would be chaos and panic, do you think government is absolutely right then in not disclosing?
Well, to a degree, yes. But then you have to consider that inevitably it's going to be in our face. And when that mothership comes down, what are we going to do then? So at some point, we're going to have to say, yes, it does indeed exist. And we're going to have to base everything on the physical evidence that we've gathered throughout the years, especially starting in the Roswell era. So the data is there, the evidence is there. Whether we believe it or not, it's up to the person that's been indoctrinated to the society.
Late astronaut Gordon Cooper saw UFOs. Edgar Mitchell believes in UFOs. He says he has said to me several times, Wilbur, that he's been told that there are visitations going on. It goes on and on and on. To me, that's almost irrefutable. That kind of evidence.
It should be. It should be. But consider this also, that a lot of what is being said is not necessarily the full picture, and that you have to be careful about disclosure to a degree in the sense that too much information for the person that's not ready for it is could be totally disastrous, and that we have to prepare ourselves slowly for the transition that's about to take place.
Tell me about this transition. How's it going to take place?
Well, it's taking place right now, and it starts with the infiltration of society, and they've infiltrated, and especially with the type of technology that they're utilizing. And based on my physical evidence, I've got samples that clearly show objects that have the ability to go through solid walls. And with that capability, then it would be safe for me to conclude that with the way the Earth is designed and all the caverns and caves that are prevalent throughout this entire structure, that the possibility would exist that those bases would be based underground inside a cavernous area inside the Earth.
These orbs that people see, Wilbur, what are they? Are they little UFOs? Are they, you know, spirits of our departed ones? What do you think they are?
I'm not really sure, but based on the evidence that my associate Robert Stanley provided me, and I'm looking at information that was recorded in 1885 by mariners outside the Pacific Ocean. And in 1885, for a mariner to say he saw a large sphere come out of the ocean would be inconsistent with what one would perceive as a UFO, especially the way society is indoctrinated. We want the UFO to look like the saucer from the Data Earth Distilled, the 1950s version, but it's not the case. And from my evidence, I've able to gather and show with physical samples anomalies that were no larger than garden peas. And those anomalies were, in my opinion, discharged from the objects I stood beneath in Lower Senate Park in July 16, 2002. So to me, that technology exists, and they're using small spacecraft. And the spacecraft that I've seen were the size of garden peas.
Oh, my gosh. Well, you know what? Everything's relative, isn't it?
Absolutely. But consider this. on the outside, this object may be as small as a garden pea, but on the inside, it could be as large as New York City. So we have to consider those options also.
Well, that's true, too. Tell us a little bit more about these green UFOs.
Well, based on my research, they were first encountered in 1942 over Germany by a RAF pilot called B.C. Lumsden, and his written report was consistent with the objects I photographed in 2002. And then in 1991, during the X-ray satellite deployment by NASA, NASA imaged a series of green anomalies sitting in space, consistent with the objects I photographed in 2002. And then Boca Raton in 2010, people imaged a green object over the ocean down near the Florida Peninsula, and that the anomaly was consistent with the objects I photographed in 2002. And then we have the 1969 footage with Apollo 11 and the objects photographed there, which are also consistent with the objects I photographed in 2002. With all of this consistency, what kind of basis do you think, in terms of an opinion, would one would form based on these physical samples? And that opinion, to my in my recollection, would be that these objects are extraterrestrial in origin, and they are indeed here on Earth.
Well, you would just about have to conclude that.
Absolutely.
Betty and Barney Hill, abducted in New Hampshire back in the 60s, you have looked at this and you've tied it in somehow to your samples. Explain the correlation here.
I was given samples by a dear friend of mine, Kathy Martin, who's associated with Stanton Friedman on a book that she's written. She gave me samples taken by Betty during the time of her visitations. And I would say she told me they were possibly taken in the 1970 era. But based on the footage that she provided me, the samples Betty Hill took were consistent with samples taken in space by Apollo 11 and consistent with the samples I took at the U.S. Capitol building. So the Hills were indeed visited by the same possible extraterrestrial race or technology that was imaged at the Capitol and was also imaged in space in 1969.
Wilbert, years ago when we were first getting UFO reports, you know, when Project Blue Book was around, we would get reports of indentations in the ground, burn marks, landing pad marks. We're not getting that anymore. Something's changed. What do you think's going on there?
Well, just like the car, spacecraft have advanced, and they're more into the anti-gravity technology that I would assume they've been using for some time now, but they're more into anti-gravity, and that with anti-gravity technology, things you would look for would be more along the line of cellular destruction in terms of when they do touch down, how the object affects the grass and the plant population around it. So there's a definite change in their technology based on my samples.
You've alluded that they're here. They're here already. What if, Wilbur, they were always here? Always, from the get-go.
We could say that. I'm basing everything based on what I was able to gather, but in reality, that is indeed the truth, because even though the information may be new to me, it could possibly be these objects have been here all along, and now that we're becoming more advanced and more conscious of things that are happening around us, that we're becoming apparent and visible to these things, and we see them.
In your work, what have you found to be some of the most stunning examples, things that have happened?
The orange spheres, that was definitely extraordinary, but my more recent samples showing what appears to be flies, and based on the physical samples, photographs look like flies. They have a body, they have two wings, but what's inconsistent is with the way I'm taking these photographs and I'm setting the camera so that it has maximum focus and maximum depth of field. It also utilizes a high shutter speed, and that in my samples there should be objects that are fully defined in terms of their physical features, but these objects that look like flies have no definition. And at 1/8,000th of a second, I start to wonder with my own recollection if indeed I was able to see these things, and I can't say that I am. And it's only because of the shutter speed of the camera am I able to capture objects that are imperceivable to the human eye.
One of our guests, Jose Escamilla, talks about rods, objects that are just spinning around all over the place, going so fast we can't see them with the naked eye, but he can capture them on video or digitally. Are we talking about perhaps the same thing?
I think Jose hit it right on the money, and Jose is a good friend of mine, and that I agree with him wholeheartedly that whatever these objects are, they're not necessarily within the bandwidth of the human eye. And consider video cameras and digital cameras and film cameras back in the day have the ability to go beyond that range, and they are essentially emulations of what the eye would see, but they go beyond that range. And when they do go beyond that range, they capture these objects that are outside our levels of perception.
Well, maybe so. Now, what do you think about this administration? What are they going to do about this?
I don't think they're going to do much of anything. Honestly, based on what I was able to submit to them, and for them to say that there's no physical samples to indicate that there is a possibility of UFOs or aliens present in our society, to me was a bunch of bull, because the samples indicate that they are. So it's still a level of deniability that does exist within the government and the levels of society that are prevalent on Earth at this moment.
Are these extraterrestrials walking among us? Are they living next to us? Are they working with us?
From what I'm getting in terms of imagery, I would think that is a very strong possibility, especially when you start getting images of objects taking off from populated areas. One could conclude that in that populated area would be a base or something that's relative to that extraterrestrial.
So they could be literally your next-door neighbor.
They could be literally our next-door neighbor.
That is truly unbelievable. What's Buzz Aldrin say these days? I haven't caught up to him for a year or so.
Well, you know, I'm looking at this material, and Buzz seems to be more forthcoming than my friend Edgar Mitchell, who vehemently denied extraterrestrial contact during Apollo 14.
And yeah, he told me that too. Same thing. But he believes. But he believes we've been visited.
He believes aliens are here. He believes in all of that. But you see, to me, that's a level of affirmation and deniability. How can you believe in one thing and not believe in the other? So it becomes puzzling to me, especially when we were speaking this afternoon. He became agitated with the direction in which I was going with the specifics of the presentation in terms of the samples from Apollo and the samples that I was able to gather at the U.S. Capitol building. So I'm concerned with what indeed they are willing to say and what they're sworn to secrecy not to say. So, you know, there's still that level that does exist. And Edgar reminded me much of my father, who to this day, I don't know what he did totally in the military, and he won't be forthcoming with the truth probably until his deathbed. So I'm not really sure how Buzz and Edgar's perceptions of these events are going to take place over this short period of the time that they're going to make disclosure.
Yeah, you know, Wilbur, when I started doing this show, and I spent 9 years with the Navy, but when I started doing this show, I had several people say that I was, you know, with naval intelligence, and I was a disinformation officer, and I'm going, what? And, you know, the truth be known, I was a public information officer with the Navy for 9 years, for crying out loud. I used my expertise and skills to do that. And so a lot of things get distorted over time. You know, somebody hears something and distorts it out of the way. In Mitchell's case, you know, I think he's being very, very honest when he tells us he's been told we're being visited. But then at the same time, when he says he did not witness anything, either on the moon or on the way there, then then that's where you're debatable, I guess. And you feel as if he's holding back.
I sensed that he was not truthful, and I was a little bit taken away by that, especially with the fact that when I mentioned the material with Buzz Aldrin, and he said to me that he was in the command control during Apollo 11, and that during that he never at any point heard anything in regards to UFO contact by Apollo 11. So, you know, there's one side of the coin. Here's one astronaut saying one thing, and here's another astronaut saying the complete opposite. So to me, there's that level of deniability, and I felt that Edgar was covering his butt.
Why would he do that?
I'm not sure. You know, I can't really say, but, you know, there's that conversation with Bob Dean, and there's that information that Bob put out with regards to certain meetings that Edgar was supposed to have taken place with at the Pentagon. And, you know, it's all based on speculation, and nobody knows what's real and what's not real, but Edgar's not going to come out there and be forthcoming with what he encountered in space because that's part of his oath of secrecy.
Maybe so. Maybe so. So with all the researchers that are out there, Wilbur, that you've done some work with, which ones do you think are truly going down the right path?
Michio Kaku, S.W. Hawking, Stanton Friedman. I mean, there are a few people out there. They're going down the right road, but without the physical evidence, it's almost like crying wolf. And that, you know, most people, unlike what I've been able to do in terms of show with comparative analysis, forensic samples that are consistent with objects, have not been able to show that type of technology or level of information, and it becomes difficult for people to comprehend the truth at that level.
Whatever happened to your colleague who went over the deep edge?
He stayed over the deep end, and I believe he became reclusive, and he fell off the face of the earth. I can't find him on Facebook. I can't find an email address. I can't find a phone number.
Is he even alive?
Any information. Who knows? He's still alive. He's obviously still there, but it's just they, like most people who have serious encounters, are tossed off to the side and deemed psychologically and emotionally unstable. And most people to this day consider myself as psychologically and emotionally unstable, regardless of the fact that I have physical samples to substantiate my claims.
What do you do next? Where does your research take you, Wilbur?
Well, at this juncture, I'm not really sure because, like most people, at some point you have to know when to hold them and know when to fold them. And
yeah.
I felt like it was time to fold the card game and just go out and just leave it as it is because, you know, you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't. And I've gotten to a point where I no longer feel I need to hear the bull that a lot of people tell me that, you know, on their encounters and all these other things without physical samples, it's just a bunch of crock, you know. So I just don't feel comfortable anymore with in what I'm doing technically.
Are you giving it up?
Not necessarily, because the samples continue to pour in. I got a sample yesterday of an object. I mean, how can I stop when they're constantly in my face?
Now, when you talk about samples, what are we talking about specifically?
Photographic evidence.
It's photographic evidence, okay. And well, but, you know, there have been other photographic evidence around for years, hasn't there?
Well, not necessarily at the level in which I'm generating these samples. And again, I'm talking specifically with the newer high-end cameras.
Right.
When you look at large format digital, and the sample I got yesterday was generated in large format digital, it's consistent with the other digital camera that I have, which is also consistent with my film camera. So no matter what camera I use, the data is still there.
Well, technology has helped a lot, hasn't it?
Consistently, yes.
Truly has. UFODC.com, that's Wilbur Allen's website. And when we come back in just a moment here on Coast to Coast AM, we'll take your questions for Wilbur and also your stories. If you've come across some incredible stories, not just lights in the sky, give me something that'll knock my socks off. We'll do that next on Coast to Coast AM. And you can always email me at george@coasttocoastam.com. Back with another hour with Wilbur Allen before our split show on Coast to Coast AM.